Blog Talk Radio.
Just a step, cried the sad man. Take a look down at the madman. Theater king's on. Silver wings fly beyond reason. From the flight of the seagull come the spread claws of the eagle. Only fear breaks the silence as we all kneel, pray for guidance. We'll be right back.
Vicki Darlings, and welcome to Late Night Poets After Midnight Show, where you get to take a walk on the wild side. If you're into the likes of Ginsberg, Bukowski, Ferlinghetti, Kerouac, and Morrison, then you are on the right night. But please check out our other After Midnight shows. Join Jeremy Thursday morning as he brings you the headliner's ball. And Break On Through with Tam on Friday. Saturday features Afasiana and Babla teaching you how to become part sinner, part saint. And every other Sunday, join Robert M. as he brings you the solace of shadows. These shows are designed so that you can color outside the lines with rich, raw emotions tinged with colloquial language, thereby pushing the envelope to expression and opening up new avenues of thought through pen and voice. So, pull up a chair, relax, and open your minds. I'm Rex, and my co-host Pam Ray and I can't wait to get into and read your words. Evening, Pam.
Hey, Rex. What's up?
Not much. What's going on?
Oh, not much, as always. Just looking forward to hanging out with you and other cool poets, hopefully. And, getting into the poetry and all that. We got a great lineup tonight, carryovers from a variety of shows, plus some open after midnight ones thrown on the board for good measure. So, good stuff. So, yeah. And, all right, well, I'll go ahead and bring on a guest, and here we go. I'd like to welcome Laurent to the show. Welcome, Laurent. Glad you could join us.
Good evening, Pam. Good evening, Rex. Pleasure to be here.
Good evening. How you doing?
It is, isn't it? The sun has sunk. It's late. And I'm somehow wide awake. Let's hope the legs cooperate.
Huh. Well, how's the weather out there?
It was 32.5 this morning. It was 32.5 this afternoon. And when I went to bed, when I finished dinner, it was 32.9. And it snowed, and now it's dropping.
Ah, yes. Well, it's been consistent at 32.
I know. It's sad, these old bones. You know, the cold that used to be easy to ignore in the past, not so easy anymore.
Yeah, bodies get older. We tend to get a little crinklier in our outlook and what it does to us when it gets really cold.
Crinklier, I like that. It's an apt description of old flesh.
Yeah. Oh, not to mention when you stand up and everything starts to pop, you know, oh, hell.
Well, I didn't want to go there, but if you insist. Oh, boy. So how are you? How are you guys?
It's 30 down here, so we're in the same club.
Ah, there you go. What does down here mean?
South Carolina.
There you go. I visited that state once to play golf. It was a fun time. 14 hours of nonstop driving. Good Lord.
Oh, I've done that. I did that that straight through trip from New York to Florida. Now that's a long drive as well.
Jesus, it is straight through, no stopping. Come on, I mean.
Well, we had to stop
for
gas, and I did get stopped by a cop for powering up to get up the hill in a van with a trailer on it, and he busts me for being 3 miles over going down the other side.
No.
Yeah. Well, you got to pay on the spot or go to jail. Oh, bastards.
Oh, speed trap.
Yeah.
Out of state plates. Get the sucker.
Well, that's going, let me see. That was 43 years ago. Damn.
Oh, Lord. You must have had long hair and they didn't like hippies.
No. I used to. Well, actually, I do now, but But before
what,
I
have hair or not?
Yeah, I was working in a Jewish deli at the time, and yeah, you got to have a little bit of proper commodity doing that.
Oh yeah.
Pam, what are you doing?
What do you mean, what am I doing?
You snuck away because we were babbling.
I don't know. I'm just in here quietly.
Well, then I guess we should get started.
All right. Sounds like a good plan. All right, here we go. Up first, we have A Life of a Rose and a Razor by Ed Hunter. And go ahead and give that a read for us, Rex.
Okay. The Life of a Rose and a Razor by Ed Hunter. What do you expect from me? My youth is washed away of dreams and my middle age has fizzled out. Today, I live to see a rose or to deal with only its thorns. I am lucky to continue with this experience. But I have learned a bit from the Creator. Many things have lived a hard line between good and bad, sad and disturbing. These humans have learned this is life as it is. Each day, the walls get closer to the hidden secret of death. And some people go through life with little hostility or agony. These humans dress well, sleep well, and have food on their table every day. These families are close and share life together. They do have moments of grief, but it's the way of life, and they have companionship within these moments. Why can life be so cruel to see a newborn heroin baby go through abstinence syndrome or even die? Going back in my lifetime, I am playing with matchbox cars in the dirt with my friend Nikki. Today, I realize how fortunate I was. And boom. Okay. All right, well, why don't we start with you?
I was struck by these humans dress well and these families, as if it was not, unless I'm misreading this entirely, it's from the Rose's perspective, I guess. This is, seems to me, a little bit of a personal poem. It's very thoughtful. Why can life be so cruel to see a newborn heroin baby go through abstinence syndrome or even die? A harsh look at life today, given many circumstances, even though, as he says, some people go through life with little hostility or agony. Still struck by these humans, as if he was an alien, which plays well with the idea of his being a rose. It's an interesting piece. I do like it.
Excellent. Thank you very much. All right, Pam, how about you?
Yeah, I like this. It kind of has an introspective feel to it. As Lawrence says, it's thoughtful and has it feels personal. I like that this is about not really having awareness until, you know, later in life and looking back. That's what it feels like. It feels like the idea of looking back and all those lessons learned. I really like this all the way through. But, you know, I especially liked, and some people go through life with little hostility or agony. These humans dress well, sleep well, and have food on their table every day. These families are close and share life. You do not have moments of grief, but it's the way of life, and they have companionship within these moments. That's a really interesting part to me because of the fact that it seems that when you see something from the outside, or like if you see people sharing pictures on social media like Facebook where, you know, they only show the pictures of, you know, those perfect moments in life, that's all we see of them. And so that becomes the impression that everybody else's life is going great except for ours. Everybody else has
a great
together
point.
Except for us. You know, so excellent write and very well done.
Nicely said, Pam. Thank you. Let's start with that top stanza, I guess. My youth has washed away of my dreams, and my middle age has fizzled out. Right there, you hit that telling moment of getting on in the later years. Today, I live to see a road or to deal with only its storms. I am lucky to continue with this experience. And yet with the live to see a rose kind of hits that notion of stop and smell the roses, so to speak. Now there's that opportunity to stop and smell the rose, but also to deal with the thorns, which come with the process of aging. The dichotomy between these humans and others shows that the difference between his experience as opposed to experience of others, because he drops in that note to the why can life be so cruel to see a newborn heroin baby go through abstinence syndrome or even die. That hits with the notion of the thorns in life, as well as the idea of understanding as you get older, you will lose people, and there's grief in that. But the idea of that being also thorny. But then he hits on the back end. Going back in my lifetime, I am playing with matchbox cars in the dirt with my friend Nikki. Today, I realize how fortunate I was, which kind of paints that idea of actually having a whole family instead of a broken family and the difference between the two. Nicely done, Ed. Thank you. All right, Pam. Back to you.
All right. Up next, we have Get Out of the Way by Thomas B. And Laurent, will you give that a read for us, please?
Certainly. Get out of the way. It is a matter of integrity. We live in a puzzle box, worry about details we have no control over, raise our false gods, their litanies of perfection. When death breathes on our neck, it becomes apparent it meant nothing. We make up words for the two-page essay when we had written one good page. Truth escaped us. No matter how hard you work to invent the truth needed, reality confronts you with the truth you must deal with. I worked hard to be a good man. I worked at it so hard, people told me I was wasting my time. I misunderstood what they were telling me. I thought I would never be good enough. They saw a far better man than I knew. They wanted me to get on with doing something with it. When I woke up to the fact that I was everything I needed, I had to start learning how to live. Like a kid at the end of a parade, I've been trying to catch up ever since. End point.
Great read, Laurent. Thank you very much. And Pam, you got first nods. What do you think?
All right. Well, I always enjoy and appreciate Thomas's writing. And yes, definitely great read there. Another one that really introspective, really looks at the idea of awareness. And I have to say that ending really made me smile. Like a kid at the end of a parade, I have been trying to catch up ever since. I think many of us have felt like that at times. And all the way through, it's a great write with strong imagery and metaphors, but the part that really draws my attention is we make up words for the two-page essay when we had written one good page. Truth escaped us. No matter how hard you work to invent the truth needed, reality confronts you with the truth you must deal with. I like the idea that just because, you know, you deny something being the truth doesn't mean it isn't the truth. I also like that he says that we make up words for the two-page essay when we had written one good page. It's that idea of saying more than you really need to, you know, throwing in those fancy words. Or, you know, throwing in, I shouldn't say fancy words, but you know what I mean? Like the idea that when you've made your point, when you've said enough, you know, let it rest on its own strength rather than keep having to add on to it. You know, I really like the points that he makes in this, right? And it's very well done.
Thanks, Cam. And Ron, you got to read it. How about you?
The thought of waking up to the fact that I was everything I needed That is, seems to me the most important fact. Yes, he, there's integrity. He works around the truth sometimes. We work hard to invent the truth needed, which I think is important. That's that soft lie we tell ourselves all the time. And he did work hard to be a good man, but didn't realize until the very end, or at least a certain point in his life, that he had underestimated himself and that if he put his nose to the grindstone, he might actually accomplish something worthwhile. It's one of the hardest things. We read a poem in the earlier show, don't let me lose my train of thought now. Damn it. What was I saying here? At any rate, it doesn't matter. It's that realization that there is more to me than meets my own eye.
Absolutely. Yes. I got to go with the title, Get Out of the Way. Kind of hits on that notion of either shit or get off the pot. And we're so busy with something that we're too inured to get out of our own way because we're kind of buried in the middle of it. And we think we're doing it right and we're on the right path, so to speak, but we're holding ourselves back. And there was a piece in here, where was it? I worked hard to be a good man. I worked at it so hard, people told me I was wasting my time. I misunderstood what they were telling me. I thought it would never be good enough. They saw a better man than I knew. They wanted me to get on with doing something with it. The idea of them seeing what you were overlooking, that idea of, all right, you're doing this. I see you doing that even better, but you're not even tracking on that itself. You're kind of ignoring it. And that's where he hits on that notion at the back end of this with like a kid at the end of a parade. I've been trying to catch up ever since that slap in the face of reality where, oh, crap, I should have listened. It's like that notion of if I knew then what I know now, what could have been done? I guess we all do that.
Yeah, it carries the same, almost, not quite, almost the same realization of passage of time that the song Time by Pink Floyd carries.
Yes, taking away the dull moments to make up a taking away the moments to make up a dull day, fritting the hours in an offhand way. Yeah, that works perfectly. Nice. Thank you. All right, Pam, where you want to go next?
All right. Up next, we have Turn Around by Betty Page, and it goes like this. Need to turn around, just go back. I want to, yes, I should have, would have, almost could have been. I have so many to choose, each dream smashed, complete, obliterated, all by doing what was right. I'm gone, far took flight. I'm so vacant now, gazing into nothingness. Memories gnaw me, chew up, spit me out. Right onto the hot asphalt, tripped on my own words, left with mere vapors, ghosts invisible to touch. Left, I'm left. Still, it's all right, though. I'll get back up, try again, speaking to his walls. Ripped my heart right out, let my blood spray all over my fountain of youth. I laugh as time fades, stuck in deep quicksand alone. As if one will save. Oh, but I could have. If it were not for that bath, I would be loved right. Flashbacks break my heart. To think of it rapes my soul. Speak of it, I'll cry. Crush my heart crimson. Tears cascade within, drown me, suffocate on life. End poem.
Damn. All right, Laurent, what do you think about that?
Crush my heart crimson. This has some of the flavor of the previous poem. I should have, I would have, almost could have been. I have so many to choose, each dream smashed from truth. A little of my earlier one too, I think. Obliterated all, doing what was right. And what does that lead to? So many times. The very next stanza, I'm so vacant. Gazing into nothingness, memories. What did doing the right thing accomplish? Well, there is that integrity, but still, threw me up, took me out. Left with mere vapors. There's a lot of what-ifs in this. Flashbacks break my heart and then crush my heart crimson. We all know what he's saying. And did in a beautiful way.
Absolutely. Thank you, Lenong. Pam, you got to read it. How about you?
Yeah, this one definitely hits hard. It's a powerful and emotive write with amazing imagery. And it does speak on regret, you know, but I feel like there's two guys represent here, two people. There's that love that you regret losing, and there's that person that who just hurt you so bad. Strongly speaks, obviously, of abuse it just really, like I said, it hits hard. And it talks about, you know, it's not only about looking back and there's things of regret, I would have, should have, you know, could have type of attitude, but it's also, as it mentions, you know, the flashbacks. And then lines like, I laugh as time fades. Stuck in deep quicksand alone, as if one will save. I like that because to me that really speaks on healing and how it's a process that you have to keep starting over and over again. Like sometimes you're able to move forward with this happiness and other times you feel like you're stuck in that quicksand. So excellent write and very well done.
Thank you. I can go with that. But this kind of hits on the notion of holding on to baggage, too. Because if, what was it? Where the hell was it? I can't find it. I'm left. That kind of hits up with the idea of need. And then rolled into still it's all right, though. I'll get back up to try again, speaking to his walls. Ripped my heart out, screwed my fountain of youth. I laugh as time fades, stuck in deep quicksand alone, as if one will save. There is that notion, waiting for someone to come along and save you. That's not how it works. You got to do the saving. Because if you're going to carry that baggage, as she does with the next stanza, oh, but I could have, if it were not for that ass, I would be loved right. Again, rolling back into that angle of a blame instead of dropping the baggage and living what you had because that's holding it back. And again, with the flashbacks break my heart, crush my heart crimson, tears cascade within me, drown me, suffocate on life. Again, that rolls right back into that idea of holding on to something which is long past, been dead, and should be moved on from because it's holding you back in life. It's the quicksand which keeps her in place, and it offers up that notion of being tossed onto the hot asphalt. You sit there burning with that that anger. It seethes, it brews, and it reminds you anew, not a good life. All right, Pam, coming back to you.
All right, great observations, everyone. All right, and up next we have Well Damn by Peter Solway. And go ahead, Rex, and give that a read for us, please.
Well Damn, Peter Solway. Never been lit up by lightning, cooked with recognition, high voltage wedding, a dull life confessing, worse than Philip Larkin's, at least he could drink. Daydream, cricket from a train, weddings entertain, smell of sweet coke. Once upon a Thomas the Tank Engine time, now curse of sulfurous Satan, milks Blakeian. A Wordsworth, too tired for revolution, sherry and heart smoking, check the chimney and mourn, Send up Dorothy, hold the ladder, news unbalanced, domestic order. Well, damn. Forecast storm approaching, wild climate change. End quote. Damn. Pam, what do you think?
Well, I think, first of all, you did a wonderful read of that. I like the way you say, well, damn. And this is a clever write, you know, and I like, well, I'm pretty sure that the quote he wrote to is, a poet is a man who manages a lifetime of standing out in thunderstorms to be struck by lightning 5 or 6 times. And I think this poem speaks really well on that particular quote. It's got a nice bite to it. It's got, to me, a great wry sense of humor. I like how the attitude and the metaphors and the imagery speak on the ups and downs of a poet who is desperately trying to find the lightning strikes of a muse in a field of dullness. Like, you know, like, I like that it's about, like, that is almost confessional style, you know, never been lit up by lightning, cooked with cognition, high voltage wedding. It's that whole, first part is that idea of just being, life being so dull and trying to make it sound more exciting than it actually is in your poetry. And the humor in the send up Dorothy, hold the ladder, news unbalanced, domestic order. I like that because it makes me think of, like, when you're somewhere where you have poor cell phone service or you know, poor internet connection, and you're, like, trying to stand by a window and stand in just the right area. And that's what that makes me think of. And I like the reference to the Dorothy from The Wizard of Oz and the idea of just trying so desperately anything to get that lightning strike. So excellent write and very well done.
Oh, I like that. Thank you. And Laurent, how about you?
Well, the poem came alive after Pam provided the quote, which I think was essential, makes all kinds of sense now. A Wordsworth, too tired for revolution, Sherry and hearth smoking, check the chimney and mourn. Send up Dorothy, but hold the ladder. That's not going to happen. It is wry and humorous, and really a perfect response to the quote.
Oh, excellent! Thank you very much. Yeah, I like that stanza too. That sort of age creeping in with that one. Words were too tight for revolution. Sherry and hot smoking. Check the chimney and mourn. Hits on that idea of the latter days of life when you're still looking for a touch of something to spark the mind again, because that opening stanza hits it real nice. And he drops in the smell of sweet coke as another thought to engage the mind itself. Then he drops in a now curse of sulfurous Satan, Mills Blakeian. But that end fitting, well, damn, forecast storm approaching, wild climate change. Is that a notion of something
Dorothy.
That's brewing in the? Yeah, the thought with Dorothy, but the idea of that those ending lines kind of hits on the idea of something brewing in the moment, just from the offhand thought,
right,
of up Dorothy.
There comes the tornado.
Kind of like hitting. Oh, maybe I can climb out of this rabbit hole.
Certainly.
Nice. Thank you. All right, Pam, what do you think? Oh, your turn. What we got next?
Yes. Remember, you threw me first into the pool. So.
Yep. Ooh. Peter's always the deep end of things.
Yeah, I have to say, this was actually one of Peter's always more straightforward writes that I was able to actually. And shorter, yes. Yeah. Wow. Too many lightning strikes. All right. Well, up next. up
you
next
made me
one,
snort
so
my cocoa.
Right. And you're up next, Laurent.
All right. This is called Am I Frankenstein? In what ancient corpse, excuse me, they put on my glasses, it works. In what ancient copse breathed the revenant, gasping, breath of frosted fire floating above pain-filled, amazed eyes, orbs of buttercup yellow, brittle, brimming, threatening seizure at the very beginning of the second act, an extended curtain call to life. Blink away the effluvium, the scattershot call that cakes with the dirt of your thrashing as you give birth to yourself. Dimensionless was the womb, fractured the split that passed you, invisible, a seed into red earth, sprung fully flowered and rootless. For there were demons, and angels fled, flaming into mists that boiled and heaved like a witch's clouded cauldron. You were the eye of Newt, Pharaoh's wing, frog tongue, and falcon claws of the magical brew that bore you out from the dead. Evil-smelling herbs zest the foul nights, the rough seasoning to this amniotic concoction of reawakening. Where then is the mad scientist who grave-robbed me? Am I Frankenstein, stapled and sewn, or a dropping from some heavenly dove sent by a capricious god in mockery of this season of masks? Concealed, nothing revealed. All the while exposed and unclothed, dichotomy feeling like Deuteronomy, an exhortation to obedience. Too real for laughter, not for hysteria. Mad as a hatter, lost as Alice. Fit for what and how and when? I know not, nor my name. So, quiet at last, I die again. Light failing at the end of day, closing curtain on a dark stage of a sold-out but silent house. End poem.
Great read, Laurent. Thank you very much. All right, Pam, what do you think?
Oh, I like this. Just beautifully written. Visceral and epic, dark imagery throughout. I like how this feels like feels like a story right, and yet it's a story right that can easily metaphorically represent a truth of oneself. And you know, the idea of we wonder, you know, about our purpose in life and who controls the strings, who's in charge of all the madness. I really like the word choices and the imagery, especially in evil-smelling herbs, zest of foul nights, the rough seasoning to this amniotic concoction of reawakening. Where then is the mad scientist who grave-robbed me? Am I Frankenstein, stapled and sewn, or a dropping from some heavenly dove sent by a capricious god in mockery of this season of masks? I like how it delves into the realm of mythology and creation, and the thought of somebody, you know, saying, well, where did I come from, and what is my purpose in life at going forth from here? So excellent write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam.
Nicely said, Pam. I'm going to go with, this is kind of the back end of life, and it's all about loneliness, because you hit on that, the ancient copse breathed a revenant, gasping, breath of frosted fire, floating above pain-filled, amazed eyes. It does hit on the note of revenant, but the idea of revenant here is one waking up. The frosted fire floating above pain-filled eyes, that kind of would work on a number of levels to whatever ails one in the moment. That extended curtain called to life is the pain of living. Let me see what else we got here. Blink away the effluvium. That's a nice, I like that line. It's the idea of washing away the cobwebs out of your mind in the moment. the scattershot call that cakes. That's the crust in the eyes. Thrashing as you give birth to yourself, trying to climb out of the sheets. Maybe there's a nightmare that's included in this. Dimensionless was the womb, fractured the spirit that passed you. Invisible, a seed in the red earth, sprung fully flowered and rootless. Again, the idea of an awakening, but the awakening is getting up itself. The demons, I guess it would be the aches and pains in body. Let me see what else we got here. The evil smelling herbs, zest of foul nights. That reminds me of pocket full of poses that they used to stuff into the Dark Ages when the Black Death was rolling around. They thought it might help. Never did. And the mad scientist who grave robbed me bites into that notion of still on the edge of not fully functional in mind and self in the moment. So am I Frankenstein? The staple and sewed, the dropping, the capricious god and mockery of the season of mass. Again, the point denotes to life from a walking on all fours to walking on two legs, now maybe walking on three. And the back end, so quiet at last I die again, is that life failing at the end of the day, closing curtain on the dark stage of a sold out, but silent house. Again, loneliness. That's epitomized right there, a silent house. There's nothing there but you or this revenant spirit, as well as everything that he goes through daily.
I will tell you what, Rex. Should the great Sphinx ever pose you a riddle, you'd figure it out.
Now, I don't know about that one, but I like this. The metaphor in this is wonderful because if you walk, especially you've got the call, you've got everything that hits on those notions of birth and death. Yeah, but it's all about a singularity, and that's us.
No, that's absolutely true. And, you know, every comment that you made was accurate on a different level than the literal one, which you could treat it as literally someone waking up after he had died and what went through his mind at that time. It can be read a number of different ways, yes.
That's true, because you dropped in Deuteronomy, so I missed on that one.
Mm-hmm. It's okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. All right, Pam, we're back on you.
All right. Well, up next, we have 69. Adult Humor by Selena. And it goes like this. Now, why would I not prefer to see those beautiful eyes looking up or down at me when we are bound in an amorous clinch instead of a position that needs a winch? Ooh, those juicy lips so full and moist can send me high without needing a hoist. Like perfect jigsaw pieces we fit. Don't think that staring at on we sit. It's conductive to turning up the heat, especially since I really hate feet. I love to stroke your silky hair and see your handsome face up there, biting your neck a little to make you shiver, not ending up with a pain in my liver. 'Tis far more beguiling and arousing for me than seeing you strain your bloody knee. Running my hands along your pecs, it's so much more thrilling than gag reflex. Got nothing against that, Percy. Just couldn't we do it the comfy way? So, 69. Think I'll just say pass. Don't relish spending the night viewing your ass. End poem.
Ah, yeah. One slip of the tongue and you're in deep shit. All right, Laurent, how about the biting humor in this one?
It drips with bodily fluids, as far as I'm concerned. This is a piece that is, well, it's delightful, number one. The double entendres are phenomenal all the way through. You know exactly what she's saying without her ever really saying it. And that works for me. Now, as to the gag reflex, got nothing against that per se, so just couldn't we do it the comfy way? Seems to fly in the face of a, how shall I say this, of a woman with warm blood who in the moment is willing to experiment, shall we say. So much of the phrasing in this, like perfect jigsaw pieces we fit. I mean, that works for me. Ooh, those juicy lips so full and moist. Send me high without needing a hoist. I like that too. Really, the humor in this is delicious, top to bottom.
Thank you, Laurel. And Pam, how about you?
I did enjoy the humor in this. Selena shared this with me about a week or two back, and I cracked up laughing. It really, especially chuckling at the gag reflex part. She needs some of that throat numbing spray. But yeah, this is great. Double entendres. Now this is to me how you do body humor. You know, it's no doubt, without a question, body humor, but done in such a way that there isn't a single part where you can, you know, say, no, sorry, can't read this on a show. You know, it's the humor is great. The attitude is great. And I love how it's, you know, it's funny, but it's also just about being straightforward and having that kind of attitude of this is what I like and this is what I don't like. You know, let's figure it out together. So excellent write and very well done.
Well said. Well, Selena, I got to say, I think Benny would absolutely have a laughing shit fit over this one. Let me see what we got. When we are bound in an amorous clinch, instead of a position that needs a winch, ooh, those juicy lips so full and moist can send me high without needing a hoist. Like perfect jigsaw puzzles, pieces we fit. Don't think that staring at on what we sit is conducive to turning up the heat, especially since I really hate feet. I like that. But the back end of this was just as funny as that up there with the, it is so much more thrilling than gag reflex. Got nothing against that per se. Just couldn't we do it the comfy way? So 69, think I'll just say pass. Don't relish spending the night reviewing your ass. Nice. All right, Pam. We're back at you.
All right. Well, next we have Saturday in New York by Blue Raven. And go ahead, Rex, and give that a read for us, please.
Saturday in New York by Blue Raven. I cruise Soho galleries in the company of others who observe and nod wisely before an untitled arrangement of wenches, soldered or glued at impossible angles. What is it I'm missing here that I missed in the red line across a blank canvas, in the featureless face framed by the jagged lids of tin cans? My lack of sophistication must be evident to all who stand around me, and I'm embarrassed, left cold, with nothing but a question. What is art? And Laurent, what about you?
Well, if you think I'm going to try and answer the question, what is art? That's a subject matter that has not ever been resolved, nor probably whatever will ever be. I do like the self-deprecating, my lack of sophistication with the evidence, all who stand around me. I'm embarrassed, left cold, with nothing but a question, what is art? You know, art is sometimes only the moment. Something is hot for a little while for no apparent reason, perhaps fiduciary reasons, who knows. But, and then 6 months later, it completely collapses. So the arrangement of wrenches soldered or glued at impossible angles, and the red line across the blank canvas that is featured so prominently at $35,000 is suspect. I think this is great.
Absolutely. Thank you. Pam, what about you?
I thought this one had a nice bite to it. I like that it ends with a question. And I think it's very relatable, as we've all been there and we've all seen that type of art. And obviously art is open to interpretation. We all have art that we like that others might not. I know for me, being someone who really likes a lot of surrealism and abstract, not everybody likes the kind of art I like. But I like how it really, to me, it takes a bite at a society of people that pretend to know what art is while casting judgment on those who don't agree with them. So it's that kind of that idea of those who have their nose up in the air and, are judging people because they can't see how magnificent this is. I really like the imagery of what is it I'm missing here that I missed in the red line across a blank canvas and the featureless face framed by the jagged lids of tin cans. So excellent write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. Thank you, Nicole. All right, I think she starts out with that. I cruise Soho galleries. There's the idea. Cruising the galleries to see what the newest hip thing is, as you point out, Laurent, because it takes away from actually going into actual museums where you can find where the cream rises to the top, so to speak, those ideas that stand the test of time, because in this situation, the art is subjective. That's why you got that question at the back end of things. But I like that first stanza kind of hits on the notion of how people are impressed in the moment, or supposedly impressed in the moment. I cruise Soho galleries in the company of others who observe and nod wisely before an untitled arrangement of wrenches, soldered or glued at impossible angles. Now, there goes the idea right there. They're nodding wisely. They don't offer up anything. So that rolls right into it about what is it I'm missing here. Well, they missed it too. They don't understand. Yet they don't have the gumption to actually question the point, which is what she brings onto. But she's kind of left cold with nothing but a question. What is art? Is that idea of what am I missing in this conglomerate, this monstrosity that is supposed to be art, when I can go to a museum and actually see considered to be real art, so to speak. Nicely done, Blue. Thank you. All right, Pam. Back to you.
All right. Well, up next we have Metamorphic Leaves of Winston and Julia by Radio Bravo. And we do have a SoundCloud for that. So let me go ahead and get to that. And here we go.
Metamorphic Leaves of Winston and Julia, a poem by Radio Bravo. That's me, by the way. Gripping the blades and tines of the forks, spoiled meals caress fragranced, and tongues losing sweat withered and eyes affixed, severed from the socket sweltered rungs. Piper's whistle broke from pipe straw, ornaments smash, shoring lover's squall. Walls of hurricanes breach the mountain's wall. Shattered burnt tunes spill the desktop drawer. Quivering stomachs, the cards align. Sign singing marches, song string strung wine. Blind apple covers, grandmother's pine. Plunge stewing pots, melting towers and shrine. Distant chasm crack through the terrain, enemy grip fathom from hostile lover's brain, compliant martyrs suicidal reign, cancerous soldiers familial chain. charred masses, ghosts spill alabaster, porcelain innards, shade disaster. Wrench the wife from mustard plaster, hiding the shadow blackening master. Spoiling rivers, hills showered red, angered nooses abused tight in bed. Dyed valley truces, dew blued instead. Brood mind erasure, rubber minded. End poem. Shit.
Great. He didn't like his read, did he?
Thank you for the SoundCloud. It's much appreciated. Now, that was a funny, I wasn't expecting that ending. Pam, why don't you kick it off?
Oh, my God, yes. That, you know, I really like the way Radio Bravo reads. It's very entertaining. It's not just the tone of his voice. It's the way he throws in those little, like, personal touches at the beginning and the end. This one I actually ended up giving gold in the Dolly artwork contest. I thought it had amazing imagery and metaphors. I like how, to me, the main theme was the idea of the horrendous acts of destruction that stem from a society of greed. You know, the one thing that bothers me is I can't remember who Julia is. Like, I remember from watching The Crown that Winston Churchill was connected with this woman named Julia, and that wasn't his wife, and I don't think it was I don't think he ever had any affairs, although I could be wrong, but for some reason it stands out in my head that in The Crown there was a character who was actually obviously a real person, the name Julia, that Winston Churchill knew, and yet I have been looking it up, and I just cannot find anything, so... you know, but anyways, I really like the imagery and metaphors in this. Quivering stomachs, the cards aligned, sign signing, marches song, string strung wine, blind apple covers, grandmother's pine, plunge stewing pots, melting towers and shrines, distant chasm, cracks of the terrain, enemy grip from fathom, from hostile lover's brain. You know, it feels like it speaks really well, and part of it could be the idea. And maybe it isn't Winston Churchill, but that's automatically that comes to my mind is Churchill. And that time period of World War II, where Europe, you know, became destroyed by violence. You know, I just really liked this all the way through, and I thought it was very well done and a great take on the prompt.
Well said, Pam. Thank you. And Laurent, how about you?
Well, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that the Winston and Julia that he's referring to comes from 1984. Two people who had a secret relationship, and he ends up losing her. And it falls in love with Big Brother. He falls in love with the state itself. And it speaks in so many ways about, how do I say this? Well, he's brainwashed, first of all. But it's about the horrifying things that can happen to an individual in that kind of society. Because Big Brother, you know, he forces everybody to live a certain way, to be a certain way. He ends up going insane.
Absolutely.
I don't know if that helps, but...
Yes, you're right on that, Winston and Julia.
Mind erasure, rubber minded. That speaks to that.
Oh, absolutely. It is about Orwell's 1984 and that relationship between Winston and Julia. She doesn't love him, yeah, but the sex they have is, I think she considers thrilling in the moment because their affair is illicit and dangerous. And it kind of hits on that idea of the abstract nature that it rolls into because of Orwell's narrative itself and the effect it has on the two of them, especially him, because she doesn't love him and he does her to a point, but like you said, things don't actually ever really work out because that was the state is the idea of control and handing out that which is and what isn't in the moment. So nicely done, Ron. Thank you. And bam, we're coming back your way.
All right. So up next, we have Painter Poet Millet Menu by Eric Svensson. And we have a recording for that one also. So here we go.
Painter Poet Millet Menu. Delightful Epicurean eroticism. Taste buds tingle. A kiss is still a kiss. Dormant cobras hiss down in picnic baskets. Tasty morsels tested. Nomad rush crush. Zephyrs and sylphs. Tablecloth, a malleable feast. First starter kiss sets the tone. Epicurean delights, eroticism. Connoisseur taste garnered over time. Feast of senses explored. Eyes eat caviar. Urgency crushes. Pomegranates, savor each succulent morsel, hands ladle passionate portions, silver fork prods unleavened bread, knife tests elasticity of natural narcotic, gregarious Mediterranean appetite, spreads itself freely. Cold butter amuaba shift shapes itself on hot toast. Pan flute breath quickens each taste sensation. Savory snake charmer spices coaxes dormant cobra. Surreal exploration of senses. Clouds, a sky parasol closer. Hot-blooded Spanish bullfighter takes a bite. Red cape tablecloth smudges scorpion stings. Epidural of Epicurean eroticism creates a cool desert oasis, palms date, Dali and Lorca beach like orcas. To touch is to taste divinity, communion of untrained tongues, blanched, bland senses quicken, first kiss, cobras hiss. Painter, poet, Millet menu. Explorations, hazy, crazy medley. Zesty, youthful zing rose to the occasion. Latter years, little ashes of remembrance, safely stashed away in urn mind. If music be the food of love, play on. Give me excess of it, that sufficing the appetite may sicken and so die. End poem.
Great read, Eric. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is much appreciated. And Laurent, what about you?
Sure.
What do you think?
Throw me to the wolves immediately. And all on the rocks of Eric Svensson. The epidural of Epicurean eroticism. There is an Epicurean eroticism all through this. Epicurean hankering delights, eroticism, connoisseur taste garnered over time, feast of senses explored, eyes eat caviar, urgency crushes pomegranates. I will tell you that you have to know your shit when you read one of Eric Svensson's poems. There's so many oblique, if I can say that, references, so much that contributes to each line. And if you know where it's coming from, that's great. And if you don't, well, then, you know, that's an issue too. Zesty, youthful zing rose to the occasion. Latter years, little ashes of remembrance. Precisely. You're no longer what you once were from that point of view. Always admire his reading. And this one is no exception.
Thank you, Laurent. Pam, how about you?
I really enjoyed and appreciated this one. Eric's style works so very well with Dali artwork. And this particular painting Barbarous Night, you can, if you Google search art about cannibalism or cannibalism art, you can find this painting. And I like how, well, throughout this contest that we ran, a lot of the rites did focus on the cannibalism, but as a metaphor. And here I feel like Eric delves into a different kind of appetite. I felt like more than any other person in this contest, in this, he saw the idea of lust and the sexual appetite. I thought this had amazing imagery, brilliant metaphors. I like how it's about that consumption of food and lust. Great alliteration. I really like pan, flute, breath quickens each taste sensation, savory snake, charmer, spices. Like, I think the mention of Pan, you know, the forest god who chases the nymph, and is a representation of that animal sexuality was great to put in there. I also really like epidural of Epicurean eroticism creates a cool desert oasis, poems, date, Dali and Lorca, beach like orcas, to touch it, to taste divinity, communion of untrained tongues, blanched bland senses quickened, first kiss, cobras hiss. It really is, to me, a raw sexuality and the idea of whetting that appetite. So excellent write and very well done.
I think you just hit on the whole thing there, Cam. Epicurean eroticism. Yes, it's all about that. The idea of dressing the thought with some food notes hits the taste buds with the thought of it. Eyes eat caviar, urgency crushes pomegranates. Savor each succulent morsel, hands ladle passionate portions, silver fork prods unleavened bread. Knife test the elasticity of natural narcotic. That would be pheromones in a moment. Gregarious Mediterranean appetite spreads itself freely. Cold butter amoeba shapes itself on hot toast. That's quite the notion, right, in that one stands itself. And so it's the same thing with the pan, flute, breath, quickens, each taste a sensation, savory, snake, charmer, spices, coaxes, dormant, cobra, surreal exploration of senses, clouds, a sky parasol closer, hot-blooded, Spanish bullfighter takes a bite, red cape tablecloth, smudges, scorpion stings. It's all an abstract allusions to actually indulging in lust with noted touches to the pomegranates, the idea of caviar, all hitting on those ideas of what you can hint at the body is often, as well as the snake. Nicely done, Eric. All right, Pam, where you want to go next?
All right, up next we have In Winter by W.P. McLeod 1. And Lauren, to go ahead and give that a read for us, please.
She got to unmute first.
Too true, too true. Can't yell that loud. In winter, a sonnet. Every lawn becomes a forest of gray hair, unkempt and flecked with snow's white dandruff. Anger pummels the angry crowd with sharp eyes and clenched fists in back alleys and barroom brawlers drunk on TV sports. If windows were doors, the homeless would rule the planet and women would pierce the ceiling of the glass-domed sky. Standing in the bullseye of a lightning strike, poet scribbles blind words on a dated legal pad. Sun yellowed with summer sweat and attic age. Uglily raveled with serpentine wrinkles like a waterlogged novel dropped into a bath of lemon shampoo, pungent to the nose and softer than the place where you stand. Breathing golden air from a cold winter wind and blowing steam into the woolen fabric of another day. End poem.
Great read, Laurent. Thank you very much. All right, Pam, what do you think?
Oh, I think this is wonderful. Great imagery throughout. I like how, to me, the main theme is the idea of finding depth and beauty in the ugliness of life. I feel like it's a tribute to a poet's gift to do that, for a poet's gift to find poetry in any little moment. I really like the imagery, and standing in the bullseye of a lightning strike, the poet scribbles blind words on dated legal pad, sun yellowed with summer sweat and attic age, uglily raveled with serpentine wrinkles like a waterlogged novel dropped into a bath of lemon shampoo, pungent to the nose and softer than the place where you stand. I like that it speaks on the idea of a poet's ability to take such harshness, such, you know, ugliness, and create something beautiful out of it. So excellent write and very well done.
All right. Thank you, Pam. All right, Laurent, you got to read it. How about you?
Yeah, for me, the ending metaphor, the last two lines, says it all. Breathing golden air from a cold winter wind, and blowing steam into the woolen fabric of another day definitely speaks to attempting to conquer, attempting to survive the daily strife that we all go through. I love the lines, if windows were doors, the homeless would rule the planet. That's something. And the initial metaphor of snow's white dandruff was quite unexpected, but makes perfect sense. Excellent piece.
Thank you, Laurent. Nice. I guess I'll start with in winter. I'm hitting age, especially since he hit those first two lines. Every lawn becomes a forest of gray hair, unkempt and flecked with snow's white dandruff. Unkempt and flecked, that kind of hits on the idea of someone wrecked in the moment, trying to offer up something. It's aged, obviously. Then that note, anger pummels the angry crowd with sharp eyes and clenched fists and back alleys and barroom brawlers drunk on TV sports, kind of hits at the idea of staying up late and still nothing is working because the mind is crowded and it's drifting off elsewhere. And then that next one, still pondering that note to actually finding that glass-domed sky. But I like that next stanza. Standing in the bullseye of a lightning strike, the poet scribbles blind words on the dated legal pads, sun yellowed with summer sweat and acid age, ugly, raveled with serpentine wrinkles like a waterlogged novel, dropped into a bath of lemon shampoo, pungent to the nose and softer than the place where you stand. That idea, that bullseye, a lightning strike, far from imagination in the moment. The dated yellow legal pad, the way it's kind of warped and ugly in the moment, The summer sweat kind of hits on the idea of a little youth still, but the acid age points again to the mind, showing its points. That drop that lemon, that bath of lemon shampoo, punch into the nose and soften the place where you stand. Hits on that idea in the moment. There's something sweet and soft that emerges. That place where you stand is that that note to age, and the back end. Those last two lines hit on that idea of breathing golden air from the cold winter wind and blowing steam into the woolen fabric of another day. Hit on that idea. Yes, I still have a little bit more to produce. From the cold winter wind, and the steam is that breath, that willing breath to live another day to produce. I like it. Thank you, WP. All right, Pam. Back to you.
All right. Great observations there, Rex. And up next, we have One Road Bump After Another by Julie Buck. And it goes like this. We butt heads and one roll bump after another, most created by you. I smooth shit over and howdy do more bumps. You bask in being such a hero to all you do for me, but never with me. A frosted day noticing you touch the cat shit on my floor more than you touch me. Thank you, darling, for giving me shame and a clean kitchen floor. This twisted knot is made, is what we made, now too afraid to take ownership. I'm shrouded in cradle Catholic guilt, sometimes confused with love. I don't start it, I respond to it, it being your goddamn idiot ways. You say you can see right through me. I say, man, that sucks, because you've missed seeing everything inside. Again, the church choir of our lives fucking lied. You do for me because it makes you feel good. What would Jesus do if he held a loaded gun? Freaky how it turns out you're the needy one. And me, I'm just pathetic. End poem.
Ouch. Damn. All right, Laurent, what do you think about that? Got to unmute again.
Oh, Lauren had to go.
Okay. All right. Well, look at that. We butt heads offering up that notion right up front. Both of us are assholes. One road bump after another, most created by you. Smoothing shit over and how do you do more bumps. A nice touch that. You touch the cat shit on the floor more than you touch me. Boy, it's a cold notion in that idea. Thank you, darling, for giving me shame and clean the kitchen floor. Well, I got to paint a narrow depiction of how their lives have turned out. And the back end of this, freaky how it turns out, you're the needy one, and me, I'm just pathetic. They're feeding into their own masochistic idea of a relationship that really sucks. She don't love him, and he don't love her. Yet they tolerate each other for the moment, and they still find time to understand, yeah, better with us than without us. What about you, since you read it?
First of all, I really like the observations that you made there. to me, this really had a bite to it. It was hard-hitting. It was gritty. Definitely raw, amazing imagery and metaphors. I like how it's about the idea of somebody who I think, you know, it represents somebody who is dealing with depression. And then the idea of people who help just for the sake of their own ego. Like you really get the idea that, this person is helping. Like picking up the cat shit. I mean, that's, I think, a nice thing to do. And the fact that the person leaves cat shit on their floor, to me, really does speak of the idea that their mind is, like, just caught up in something else. But it becomes about, you know, the idea of it could be an individual, like a relationship, or it could even represent your relationship with, you know, like the church or other people, and how oftentimes there's this hypocrisy of helping just to make yourself look good. So excellent write and very well done. I especially like, I'm Shrouded in Cradle Catholic Guilt, sometimes confused with love. I don't start it, I respond to it, it being your goddamn idiot ways. So just, wow, hard hitting.
All right, where are we going now?
All right. Well, up next, we have, hold on, let me see if I don't have one before this. I'm kind of trying to check my order right here. And, okay, all right. So, up next, we have Belle's Dungeon by Betty Page. And I'm going to have you read this one, Rex, because it is a gender-neutral read.
Belle's Dungeon by Betty Page. A tale never told, hidden as ancient secrets, dark, sacred passions. You know the story, happily ever after, what comes after that. Belle did live with beast, yet there are things no one knows, too dark for child's books. Belle hid a dungeon. What happened none speak about, that is, until now. Round castle walls grew, thick branches holding sharp thorns filled with cruel magic. Wise snow owls gaze, moonlight illuminates, revealing gold gates. Beyond the gate's path, mystical shimmering roads leads to Belle's dungeon. What goes on there? Well, it's absolutely frightening. Caged beasts howl and scream, haven for wizards, these secret experiments kept hidden from beast. Spells done at midnight, reinforced at witched hour, mystery concealed. Crimson wine dripping, hearts pounding as one is chased, wounded, led to trap. Wolves, they start howling, neath blood-red full moon tonight, screams heard down vineyards. She dropped her glass, smashed, tumbling, crawling on stone ground, weak, she can't get up. Dizzy, she's spinning, wakes up next to gold cages, chained up to beast's bed. Belle looks so sweet, calls to Lumiere to drip wax, excited Belle grins. Mrs. Teapot pours tea, laced with yet another dose. Belle says, drink it up. The girl refuses. An unknown wizard walks in, casts a magic spell. Liquid pours within. She sucks on a sugar cube laced with LSD. Bright rainbow colors, trails surround Belle's every move. What are you doing? Suddenly silence. Girl just stares with hollow eyes. Frightened look on face. Tears stream down her cheeks. Realizing her heart's ripped out, yet she's still alive. Belle bites her fangs in blood splatters. She savors taste. New vampire born. Girl thought she'd date Beast. Belle was not having it, though. Now she's Belle's new slave. And poem.
I like it. I like it. It was, yeah, obviously a carryover from Solace of Shadows when we did the dark Disney. All the way through, she keeps the tone dark. It's a great twisted take on the Beauty and the Beast. You did a wonderful read of it, Rex. I really like that she starts out the line, A Tale Never Told, because it's a play off of that song, A Tale as Old as Time. But instead of being the story that everybody knows, it's the story that, you know, the truth, the stuff kept away. I really like Belle did live with beasts, yet there are things no one knows, too dark for child's books. And then what a great twist at the end, you know, to find out that, Belle is this vampire and this mistress, you know. Belle looking so sweet, calls to Lemire to drip wax, excited Belle grins. Mrs. Teapot pours tea laced with yet another dose. Belle says, drink it up. And and wonderful dark imagery. Tears stream down her cheeks, realizing her heart's ripped out, yet she's still alive. Belle bites her fangs in, blood splatters. She savors taste, new vampire born. Excellent dark write and very well done.
Nice. Let me see. Kind of hits on the idea of since she dropped in the dungeon angle and everything that hits on this, the master, the wizard, the master, kind of hits on the idea of a role-playing in an S&M atmosphere with all the ideas that she's got going in this. Especially with the LSD drop in, literally. And that thought for the young girl looking so sweet, Belle grins, excited. This does hit on the idea of a hardcore role-playing game that's taking a twisted turn. All right, what will you do next?
I like that hardcore role-playing game. So. All right. Up next, we have Witch Reasoning by Kazia F., and it goes like this. Insane is the moon of all illusion. Under the dark sky, look at the silver round reality. Beauty will steal you, energy consume every core. The love of her beauty makes pages full. Mystic born again, silver imprinted in the pupil. Sanity, delusion, art, a black widow. Insanity, a white tiger. Wild, powerful, confident, nature-driven. I'd rather die in hands of sanity as normality to capture the safety of wild soldier. Shall we argue? Battle of reasoning, temptation of perspective. Insanity, the dual fighter. I'd rather be a root of a tree, for my eyes could not bear to be a witness to its death by sane human hand. Intoxication of insanity, the misfit to delusional society with their medals of achievement. Witch Reasoning and poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. I mean, it bites at the idea of sanity and insanity and which one reflects the thought of the title of self, Witch Reasoning. Kind of also hits on that idea of wanting to actually understand the note of insanity, because in order to live within this world, insanity is the note which actually keeps one sane, because all those who claim to be sane are already locked up in institutions where they can find their little bit of sanity in seclusion. This, on the other hand, offers up that note. We look insane as the moon of an all illusion. Beauty will steal you. Energy consume every core. The love of her beauty makes pages full. Again, that gives birth to that idea. Better to have the mentality and the insane notion of living on the outside than be trapped, doped to the gills on the inside, claiming you are sane. What about you?
I like that. I like that. Very cool. And, I really like that this asks that question in the title and at the end. And the idea of, to me it really speaks on how any perspective can be seen as sane or insane. And if we disagree with each other, does that mean one of us is insane? Or does it mean we all have a valid point? I really like insanity, a white tiger, wild, powerful, confident, nature driven. And I think that's a great representation of the contradictions. I like the contradictions used there, because in reality, white tigers are seen more in captivity, because in the wild they're considered a defect and they often don't survive. So it's that idea that those with the creativity that's considered insane being, as you were mentioning, locked away, driven out of society. I really like Shall We Argue, Battle of Reasoning, Temptation of Perspective, Insanity, The Dual Fighter. I'd rather be a root of a tree, for my eyes could not bear to be a witness to its death. I like how that speaks on just almost like the idea of wanting to hide. Just a wonderful thought-provoking write and very well done.
All right. So where do we go next?
All right. Up next, we have Lesser Known Gods by Eric Svensson. And we do have a recording for that one. So let me find it. Here we go.
Lesser Known Gods. Twiddle-dee, twiddle-thumb, gather round the noble vine. Chime of tubular bell climb, butterflies and berries. Betook merry wine labels. Valiant viticulture spreads its green fingers. Lyrical lanes gallop across hills and vales. Phenology onomatopoeias a winemaker senses. Rule of twiddle-dee, twiddle-thumb drums picket fences. In vino veritas, viticulturus founder, Father Bacchus cautions thus, blue jay bright will be if we drink in moderation. Ferocious line fracas results from drinking more. Cape of Good Hope becomes Flying Dutchman, Cape of Storms. Excessive inebriation degrades us to lowly ass status. Delirious donkeys, we commit all kinds of stupidities. Vatted amber gold ambrosia slumbers in cool cellars. In vino veritas, vintage vats constrain rival ruby reds. Brilliant birds of paradise, rainbow effervescence, Vivaldi's spring, Wagner's verve, quickened synapses sing, merry madrigals meander, tender vine leaves bud from the hills of Ampelos. Earth and air alchemize, twiddle-dee sunshine chords, twiddles rains, rule of thumb. Onomatopoeia of winemakers' finely honed senses. Castanets compose flamenco overtures. Rapid fire of hot-blooded gypsy heels on oak floorboards. Ricochets of sensual, sultry, senorita aloofness. Wine vats abide in butterfly stasis fermentation. By and by, oak chrysalis barrels decant blue murmurs. Water to wine, clay-fired goblets raised heavenward. We dine at Canaan in vitro veritas wedding feast. Enter.
Great read, Eric. Thank you for the background. It is much appreciated. All right, Dan, what do you think?
Again, another fabulous write by Eric. Love the imagery and the use of alliteration. great word choices. I really like how this rite speaks on the idea, to me anyways, of the benefits of wine in moderation and how when not taken in moderation, we can end up making fools of ourselves. I really like Brilliant Birds of Paradise, Rainbow Effervescence, Vivaldi, Spring, Wagner's Verve, Earth and Air, Alchemize, Tweedledee, Sunshine, Quartz, Twiddle, Rain, Rules of Thumb, Onomatopoeia of Winemakers, Finely Honed Senses. You know, it pays tribute to those who, you know, make the wine, and the idea of how important wine is to life and to vitality. But, you know, also like it says, Blue Jay Bright will be if we drink in moderation, you know, but otherwise, and you could find yourself, here we go, this is excessive. And inebriation degrades us to lowly ass status. I love that. I think that's, I think lowly ass status is just an absolutely great line. Delirious donkeys, we commit all kinds of stupidities. I think this was said in such a clever and brilliant way with a great bite of humor. So excellent write and very well done.
Yep. Plenty of alliteration to bite on the tongue itself. Valiant viticulture spreads its green fingers, lyrical lanes gallop across hills and vales. I like that. Onology, onomatopoeia, winemaker's senses, rule of Tweedledee, twiddled thumb, jumps picket fences again. And then he has a note. In vino veritas, viticulture is found at Father Bacchus. Fortune thus, Blue Jay Bright will be if we drink in moderation. In vino veritas, truth in wine, or in wine truth, and that idea of, we've been making wine and even mead and beer because of all those ages where the water wasn't actually worth the drinking because of everything that was contained within it. So with the idea of making wine and beer itself, it offered up those thoughts to getting something pure, and everybody was drinking it from the kids right up to the adults because it was the purest thing around. So there's also that idea of the purity of that which we had to employ in order to jumpstart us ourselves. But this works well with that quote he's gotten. Great wine requires a madman to grow the vine, a wise man to watch over it, a lucid poet to make it, and a lover to drink it. So he hit all the right notes with this piece.
It really does. Absolutely. Great comment, Rex. All right. Up next we have... Sorry about that. I didn't mean to keep stepping on you. Up next we have Boundary Line by A.R. Mundell. And go ahead, Rex, and give that a read, please.
Boundary Line by A.R. Mundell. Should we move the baseline? It's been done in times before. These imprints of marking flags embedded in the shore. From where those rebel hands had grasped to grasp that kinder air, laying life and limb to line, to change the value shared, to swim a sea less hostile than those their mothers drowned, or reach a land more plentiful than those their father found. The waves do beat the chaff away and sweep it out to sea, slowly molding sweeter sand in perpetuity. Our morals morph with each new hand and voice to make them stir, shaping all our futures a little saner than before. But what is sane? That baseline, the boundary not to walk, without a frown or grasp or call from lock of shock and bark. Where Bedlam once welcomed the same, to come watch tortured souls spinning, screaming in their chairs like actors in a show. They'd watch and ask politely, then move on in the tour, never think on that thin line twixt them and that lock. Insanity took many forms, to laugh or love or leap, a female with hysteria, enough for doubts to creep. Reading books incessantly, driving cars at speed, women wearing pantaloons or being too in need. All these things could find you there, these and so much more, but now those flags have long since moved and opened up that shore. A baseline of agreement, an illusion of the hive, where only those that toe their line are left to truly thrive. What chaff has yet to wash away? What stains have yet to fade? for darkness does our lines for a lamb in boundaries that be laid and fun. All right, what do you got?
Well, first of all, great read there, Rex. As always, A.R. Mundell has she has just wonderful rhyme and flow, great use of imagery. I really like that this takes us through the history of insanity and judgment and insane asylums. And it's actually interesting. If you ever look at a list of things that women especially could be put into an insane asylum for, that their families could have them committed for, like in the 1800s or even in the 1900s, it's just absolutely horrifying. And I like that she speaks at the end about the chase, you know, about what's left over and yet it has to be washed away. The idea that there's so much about women that are misunderstood or misjudged. But I shouldn't say just women. It's mental illness. There's so much that yet has to be learned about mental illness. I really like this all the way through, but especially our morals morph with each new hand and voice make them stir, shaping all our futures a little saner than before. For what is sane, that baseline, the boundary not to walk without a frown or gasp or call from lookers shock and balk? You know, the idea of, what should you allow to be able to do and not be considered insane, you know? And I really like insanity took many forms to laugh or love or leap, a female with hysteria, enough for doubts to creep. Reading books incessantly, driving cars at speed, women wearing pantaloons, or being too in need. A really deep look into a history where mental illness has not always been always understood. So excellent write and very well done.
Nice. Well, she's hit on that, but those last two stanzas hit on the real idea, a baseline of agreement, an illusion of the hive, where only those who toe their line are left to truly thrive. What chaff has yet to wash away? What stains have yet to fade? What darkness does our line draw now in the boundaries which we've laid? There's the idea of giving in to the morphology of words and voice and toeing the line for particularities or peculiarities of that which is being now laid out to bear. You can't keep changing, moving the line, so to speak, and changing what the words mean just because you have a new thing you want to shove down everybody's throats. And that illusion of the hive says it quite a bit. And so does that where only those who toe the line are left to truly thrive, which again paints that notion of going back to what she started out with. Our morals morph with each new hand and voice to make them stir, shaping our futures a little saner than before. That kind of questions the notion of sanity, because those last two stanzas, they don't walk in sanity. They walk in control, and that control hits on the idea of making a world only a few have control over, yet everyone is expected to exist within it. And if they don't exist, they'll be removed or told that they're insane, and they're the ones that get locked up or re-educated. All right, what we got next?
Yeah, I really like what you had to say there, Rex. Very cool observation. And I'm just putting something on the board, and then I'll go grab a write. And there we go. I'm just entertaining myself. All right, let's see.
That looks like a, what the hell was that? What the hell was that? Oh, that looks like one of the Langoliers from Stephen King's movie.
Yes, yeah, it definitely looks like something evil. Yep, that's my smile mask. All right, up next we have A Broken Heart by Nikki Kelly, and it goes like this. She cried all her tears over a love that she had believed in, trusted in his advances, but it wasn't quite the same for him. At first he was all forlorn. She was flattered but was reserved, wasn't quite sure of him, and wasn't sure that she deserved. He would call upon her, and they would talk about anything, the joy that he brought, well, she could feel her heart sing. His situation wasn't certain, depended upon the will of his aunt. His father was a gentleman with little money for him to grant. The youngest of three sisters, and less favorable was her situation. Her family depended upon her for a good match, not just infatuation. You only had to see them to believe that they were both in love. All the signs were there. They fitted together like hand in glove. All her family expected that someday soon he would propose, raising her expectation, and even she had begun to suppose. In his pursuit of her, she had been hopeful of his intention, that then he began to retreat. Had he just toyed with her affection? She had written to him in the hope he would explain to her, to no avail, with no reply. She began to doubt he really cared. It wasn't before too long she heard he was engaged to another. Her heart was broken in two, consoled in the arms of her mother. She had cried enough tears, was in no hurry to find another man. For now, her intention was to live her own life for as long as she can. End poem.
Great read, ma'am. Ms. Bites at that age were expectation was placed heavily, especially since she hit on that note of she was expected to take care of the family with this marriage, and he's expected to find a woman that offers up a noted dowry, so to speak. And it starts out one way and ends another because he's found a larger dowry, and she's left as the befraught spinster, so to speak, as she puts in that last two lines. But now her intention was to live her own life for as long as she can, offering up that note. Maybe this was the one chance she had in the moment. What do you think?
I like that, what you had to say there, Rex. This is a carryover from the Anne Bronte contest show. And I thought she did a wonderful job of capturing a storyline that fit really well with that time period. It is a representation of a time period where courting was done, and you were expected to act more reserved, and you were expected to have there was expectations of having honor when courting. But unfortunately, that the reality was that didn't always happen. I remember reading somewhere that one of the rules of courting was that you were supposed to never toy with a woman's affections. Like, you always had to be very clear about how you felt, whether you liked her just as a friend, you know, never, like, you know, pull her along. And this speaks on that. And it, as you said, Rex, it starts out one way and then takes a turn. At first, you know, there's that idea of, you know, seeing that love and, you know, having that hope not only of having a good marriage for your own sake, but a good marriage for the family's sake, and that kind of pressure. And I like how at the end it becomes about her not only not looking for a man, but not looking for what will make her family happy, rather just being true to herself. So excellent write and very well done.
All right, where are we going next?
All right, up next, and just to let everybody know, we will have carryovers, and carryovers will go on Friday's Break On Through show. So just giving people a heads up on that. Up next, we have Arid Wind, Stillborn in the Petrified Forest by Guilty. And go ahead, Rex, and give that a read for us.
Arid Wind, Stillborn in the Petrified Forest by Guilty. Arid winds stillborn in the petrified forest, hollow trees gape in eternal disbelief. Water retreats until the bitter sun dries, the last leaf. Until naught but dust covers the abandoned shack, love once filled the bones, gave vibrancy, bounced sing-song widow chimes. Hinges well-oiled swing, and birds outside chirp from trees. Lush flora abound, inching on majestic spines, branches filled with green leaves, never would one imagine that love could die, and impotent thoughts, a heart dumbstruck with fear and life, do decline. And both. What do you think?
Great read there, Rex. Oh, I thought this was an amazing write. Just brilliant imagery and metaphors. He wrote to the prompt, "But he that dares not grasp the thorn should never crave the rose." I like how this speaks on the idea of a heart that is starving for love. And I particularly like the imagery, "Until naught but dust covers the abandoned shack, love once filled the bones, gave vibrancy, bounced to the sing-song window chimes, hinges well-oiled swing, and the birds outside chirping trees. Lush flora bound, inching on majestic spines." It speaks on that idea of once having that love and then, you know, starving for it again, you know, wanting it again. I really like the also the lines, "An impotent thought, a heart dumbstruck with fear and life do decline." Being afraid to grasp what's right in front of you. So excellent write and very well done.
Nice. I like the bite, a little abstract thought. "Arid winds stillborn in the petrified forest, hollow trees gape in eternal disbelief. Water retreats until the bitter sun dies, dries the last leaf." That hits on quite the barren edifice there. And then, "Until naught but dust covers the abandoned shack, loved ones still the bones." It tells the tale, the declination, the trail even, of that which once was, but now is. Fear and life do decline. Nice. Thank you, Guilty. All right. I guess we got time for one more, at least.
Yep. And our last poem for the night will be "Resistance" by Colap. And it goes like this. "I've traversed hells that I wouldn't wish my worst enemy, born under a starless sky. I've somehow managed to englobe myself in the placenta of moon's glow. You need not feel pity for me, for from my luckless sort, from storms, floods, tsunamis, deaths, and mass, from series of exploitations where a woman was objectified, there surged a diamond that I've encrusted in my heart. I've carved out a meaningful life, though in this latest phase, drought has clasped its claws. I'm caught in the thorns of cacti and scorched by lack of desire. Pray not for me, for within my womb the embers are still burning, and days still carry wonder in my child's eyes. From up there, moons and stars still speak to me from high up there. I plan to cling on to dear life until the very end, for there's always a surprise just around the bend." End poem.
Great, Pam. Thank you very much. That is quite a bit in this. That first one-third to half offers up the darkness, the thoughts of that which been traveled through life. And there, there surged a diamond that I've encrusted in my heart. I've carved out a meaningful life, though in this latest phase, drought has clasped its claws. I'm caught in the thorns of cacti and scorched by lack of desire. it's on that second phase of life itself, then it's but do not pray for me, for within my womb the end of is still burning, and days still carry wonder in my child's eyes. So child's eyes is important. It's just sitting on that idea of despite all that's happened in the first third and a half, she still hasn't lost that childlike awe, which leads one to keep an idea of magic and hope that still seems eternal, which she hits on the last two lines. For there's always a surprise just around the bend. Must be done, Colette. All right. What about you?
Well, first of all, I have to say, I really like that you brought up the point that she mentions, having those youthful eyes, seeing things in such a way as not to grow old in the spirit or in the mind. Because I'd read that part, but it really didn't connect with me until you mentioned that. To me, I definitely saw the idea of, and this has powerful imagery and metaphors, and, the great thought on the idea of a woman who is made stronger through the trials of life and doesn't want any pity. I really like how this is dark in the beginning, as you mentioned, and then gets that lightness, that positivity. I really like, for from my luckless sort, from storms, floods, tsunamis, death, and mass, from series of exploitations where a woman was objectified, there surged a diamond that I've encrusted in my heart. I've carved out a meaningful life, though in this latest phase, drought has clasped its claws. I'm caught in the thorns of cacti and scorched by lack of desire. Pray not for me, for within my womb the embers are still burning. I like that, the idea of, yes, I'm going through a difficult phase right now, but I will be made brighter and I will be made stronger by it. So just a really amazing write all the way through and very well done. And great show tonight, Rex.
Yep. Thank you very much, Pam. And Laurent, first in, first bell. And Stelina, and hats for the boards. So we shall do this again next Tuesday as we delve into something else. All right, gang. Have a nice evening, and we'll see you soon.